Will the House come back to order? Before the recess, we were under unfinished business and had adopted a supplemental calendar. Before we go into that calendar, I have House Bill 538, an act relating to workers' compensation, occupational disability benefits for firefighters, and providing for an effective date. This bill has picked up a fiscal note, so at this time it will be assigned to the Finance Committee. Into the supplemental. Madam Clerk, would you read the first item on that supplemental?
House Bill Number 405 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor, and Act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government and to capitalize funds and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a CS Finance with the same title and due pass. Finding due pass, McLean, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Jackal, Larson, and Ulmer. With no recommendation, Barnes, Phillips, Sharp, and Kopanen. I have a committee substitute.
Having a committee substitute, Representative Taylor.
Yes, if I might just have brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Will the body stand at ease? Come back to order. Before the at ease, we had a CS before us, Finance, and at this time the chairman put a call on the House. The chairman will lift that at this time. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent we adopt the Finance CS for HB 405.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, that committee substitute Finance has been adopted. Madam Clerk, do we have any amendments?
Amendment number one by Representative Navarre.
Representative Navarre, amendment number one.
Speaker, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Amendment number one, unanimous consent. Are there any objections to amendment number one? Any objections? Hearing none, amendment number one has been adopted. Madam Clerk, the next amendment?
I have no further amendments.
Having no further amendments, Representative Taylor?
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had just disposed of amendment number one. Amendment number two should be on your desk at this time. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Representative Taylor.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection.
There being objection, Mr. Speaker, I would note that each member should have the backup materials included in this with this amendment. And that's a March 31 memorandum from Division of Legal Services explaining the impact of this amendment regarding COLAs on the collective bargaining process. There was also an additional memorandum from Mr. Uttermole, which they'll be copying and distributing right now, whether this passes or fails, so you'll have for your background on it, basically explaining that it is necessary to have intent language within the amendment specifically stating the intent of the legislature so as to accomplish the purpose of amendment number two. As you know, during the process of working on the budget before the Finance Committee, the question of whether or not COLAs would be approved came up, and within the budget bill we have made reductions on cost of living adjustments for certain groups, that being those governmental employees not covered by collective bargaining agreements and others within the formula programs that have been affected by this. That's recipients of aid to dependent children and welfare recipients already affected. It only seems appropriate that if in fact we need as a body to reach to the level of reducing and eliminating the COLA or cost of living adjustment pay increase for state employees, that should be done even-handedly, Mr. Speaker, across the board with all state employees and not just with one group that is not covered by a collective bargaining agreement. The savings for those, at least it's my understanding, Mr. Speaker, the savings within this amendment is between 21 and 22 million. That's a guesstimate, but it's my belief that it's close to accurate, because the COLA reduction for having not the governmental unit people, it was about 8 million, and they make up about a third, I believe, of the workforce, or two. Maybe it's only a quarter, but we're looking at the total COLA would have been about 30 million. 8 has already been taken by taking governmental workers, leaves about 22 million left. I'd be willing to stand corrected on that if I'm wrong on the overall number, but that is the intent of the amendment, and it would significantly reduce the cost of the operating budget. And I believe that if it's fair to take it from one group, then it certainly should be fair that it be treated even-handedly across the board with all groups. That's the reason for offering the amendment, and I commend it to you, Mr. Speaker.
To amendment number 2, Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Point of order, please. I don't understand who Republican caucus is, and I don't believe that should appear on an amendment before any bill, and I ask that it be stricken and not included again.
The chair, in ruling on the format, would have to agree with the representative there that the members who care to sponsor it may do so, but the caucuses of either are not recognized in this body. So,
Mr. Speaker, if I might, it was not my intent to have to designate it as such, but as you know, there wasn't an amendment pending. I was trying to get all the names written down, and I just wrote that at the top over and above it, and I apologize to the body for incorrectly designating it.
Thank you, Representative Taylor. To Amendment 2, Representative Boyer.
Inquiry, then. Does that mean that all members of the Republican caucus are sponsoring this amendment?
Well, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cabina.
I'd like to know who the members of the Republican caucus are, then, because there's members of the Republican Party within the majority.
Yeah, the chair has ruled on that question, that a particular caucus may not sponsor a bill, so it'd be the understanding of the chair that all members of the minority would be shown as offering this amendment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr.
Any further debate on amendment number 2? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
12 yeas, 27 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Would the House come back to order? Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to place a call on the House on this bill and on all amendments, please.
Okay, the House has been called on the bill. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to amendment number 3?
Amendment number 3 by Representatives Baker and R. Phillips.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment in front of you is what's typically referred to in government as a vacancy factor amendment. Representative Parnell and I participate in local government at a time when municipal assistance and revenue sharing were trailing downward. And this is a vehicle
Pardon me?
Representative Cabina, your point of order.
I don't believe there's an amendment in front of us, Mr. Speaker.
The representative, I don't believe, did you move amendment number 3?
I did.
I thought, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. We participated in government at a time when municipal assistance and revenue sharing was on the decline. And this is a vehicle which our local government used that proved effective. the vacancy factor in this state government was much similar to that of the municipality of Anchorage a few years ago, which is about 5%. This amendment takes the vacancy factor from 5% to 3%. It's a typical use of government strategy when you have to reduce budgets. The administration helped in preparing this amendment, and so that it actually addresses the vacancy factor area, excluding any agencies that operate on a 24-hour basis. It amounts to some $9.4 million. It affects not one singular job. There are no jobs lost. It simply cuts the what we typically refer to in local government, the fat out of our agencies. So it takes no jobs away. It simply takes away the slush funds, and we've used this vehicle in the past, and I would urge its adoption. $9.4 million.
Any further debate on amendment number 3? Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, I was going to say this is a savings of approximately $9.5 million. This amendment was offered by myself in the Finance Committee and was rejected, and therefore we're presenting this for a full body vote. Urge the members to vote for it. Yes for it.
Representative Gail Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak in favor of this amendment. You know, as we proceed with the budget process and as we find ways to decrease the budget over the years, and we know that we are going to be facing these decreases for the next couple of years, this seems to me one of the simplest and most reasonable areas in the budget to cut, because there are no actual human beings in these positions. These are vacant positions. In a private business, in tight times, you would not have this kind of a vacancy factor. This is so simple and makes so much sense and doesn't hurt a single person. And I would urge the body to vote for this amendment.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The understanding of the vacancy factor that some people have is so simplistic that it makes absolutely no sense. So I want to try to explain it to people. What we do is we fund the budget. We say for all of the employees that we have budgeted in this budget, it will cost this amount of dollars, say $10 million, over the course of a year to fund all those positions. Okay, and then we say it's unreasonable to expect that those positions are going to be filled over the course of the entire year. In fact, we think that some people are going to quit and it's going to take a couple of weeks or months before other people are hired. So we take that $10 million and we cut out 5 to 8 to 9% of that number. And that's called the vacancy factor. What that means is that those people who are employed will, when someone quits or leaves or something, you save that much money so that you can pay for the positions that are working full time. To suggest that a reduction like this does not cut additional people is not only ludicrous, it's false information.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader, your point of order.
I hesitated earlier, but I think it's demeaning to refer to anyone's ideas or imply that anyone's ideas on this floor are ludicrous or simplistic. I know it's been a long and a hard battle, so to speak, but I'd appreciate if we keep the rhetoric down a bit on implications towards the quality of a member's ability to think.
Well, Mr. Minority Leader, the use of the term simplistic as well as ludicrous, I've heard oftentimes on the floor a simple word, silly, is often used, but I would ask members to refrain in particular from using some of those words and be very careful, please. Representative Orr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize. I'll try to rephrase it and say that to me it seems ludicrous.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Speaker, to respond, I understand.
Wait, Representative
Speaker,
Baker.
There's a point of order. He may call it.
Yeah, if you have a point of order or something, this is not just an open forum. We're not at the, you know, we are not operating under Robert's Rules of Order and or other things.
Mr. Speaker, I'll try to tone it down a little bit and try to get across to people what the vacancy factor is. What the vacancy factor is the money that we back out of the budget, assuming that there will be some transition as people leave and new people are hired, that there'll be some transitionary cost savings. We already backed that out of the budget. And it's already high in this state. It's not that there's the vacant positions that you see are not year-round, fully funded vacant positions. What they are is positions that for that period in time, be it a day, a week, a month, sometimes 6 months, that are held vacant so that you can pay for the costs that we have underfunded all of the jobs in state government. I see people shaking their heads, and I can tell you that that is what the vacancy factor is. And what you're saying here is that we're going to increase that vacancy factor an additional 2%. That means that that number, that amount of time in somebody's job has to be held open for that much. And what it does is it means that more jobs have to be held vacant for longer periods of time. That means people are going to lose, in some cases, their jobs. And let's not characterize it any other way. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, to amendment number 3, we'll get Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I hope I don't have to speak a lot today, clearing up the record, seeing as I have a sore throat. But let's talk about the vacancy factor a moment and what's real and what isn't. The real facts are that in many of the agencies, the vacancy rate is very, very high. In others, it's not quite so high. Now, we have forced a vacancy rate to cover the COLA that we haven't funded in the budget. That vacancy rate for most departments, if memory serves me correctly, somewhere around 3%. As we've been through the budget process, one of the things that we have consistently talked about is whether or not we could have an amendment that would further reduce that vacancy rate, and the number that had been talked about has been from 1% to 2%, and whether or not each and every department could, in fact, cover that particular vacancy factor in their budget. And if you look at the amendment that was handed out, I think that the amendment very clearly delineates which agencies that it is felt could cover that vacancy factor. If you look at it real close, you'll see that some can, some can't. And you ask yourself, why is that? Because if you work with the people in OMB and other places to come up with an actual, fully documented, factual amendment, you'll find that some can and some can't absorb the 2%. And that, of course, is what is reflected in this amendment. And to lead you to believe otherwise, I believe, is inappropriate. I personally would not stand here and support a vacancy factor that I did not believe each and every agency could absorb. I had the vacancy rate in the Finance Committee and could, with a brief at ease, secure that very fast and tell you what the vacant PCN numbers were for each and every department in February. And as most of the agencies came before the Finance Committee, before people started throwing a fit about me asking them about the vacancy rate, I consistently ask about their vacancy rate in their departments and ask how many people they'd hired since the date that I had secured the number of vacant positions in February. Most had not hired people to fill those positions, and most had not intended to hire and were planning for, in some cases, to use the 3% vacancy factor, if memory serves me correctly, for the COLA that they had anticipated through the governor's FY93 authorized budget not to form, to fund. So I therefore believe that this is a proper amendment before us. There is plenty of vacancy to absorb this amendment that is before us, and if need be, I will send to my office for the documents that shows the vacancy factor in each and every department by PCN number.
Representative Parnell, you've been seeking the floor.
I have, Mr. Speaker, and thank you. And we did deal with the vacancy rate in Anchorage, as had been alluded to by one of the previous speakers. However, I believe the University of Alaska system would have a hemorrhage at this point. We're supposed to be responsibly reducing the budget, and almost $4.5 million is proposed here at this stage. And for us to hinge almost 50% of this reduction on the University of Alaska's back, I don't think is fair. After all we've done and all the proposed budget cuts the university has been seriously giving to us. It would seem to me we'd want the Board of Regents to show us where they would take this cut and where this would shortcut the students. So I can appreciate the thought and the consideration. The other thing that came to mind as I was looking through this was I was guessing the number just below that might be a little off because of that next one, the office there, is probably the vacancy factor of about 7,546.1. That's in jest, sir. Thank you.
Representative Kopanen.
Mr. Speaker, I just wish to follow up on the comments of the preceding speaker. The university was already cut very sharply by the committee, and additional cuts were taken, and the COLA amendment, for example, there was an addition just to round out the figure, taking a further cut. Specific cuts were made in administration beyond the level that was offered earlier, and in intercollegiate sports, thereby ending intercollegiate sports. And this would mean the total cut to the university system would probably be in a range of about 11 to 12 million dollars, which is really more of a substantial cut than is being offered to any other agency. There may be some positions in the university system, classified positions, maintenance workers and the like, whose hire may be delayed in order to make up for a so-called vacancy factor. But you should know that most instructors and professors are hired for a 9, 10, 11, or 12-month contract, and the contract is figured on the month that they teach. So there is no money set aside for them for the period that they are not there. In other words, this is one area where the so-called vacancy factor does not work out any more than it does in public school. You know, you pay the teachers for the time they're there, and you don't pay them for the summer vacation. They're essentially laid off during that period. So the money is not there. It will come out of other programs. And with the cuts we currently have in place, we estimate that 168 currently employed personnel and teachers and instructors in the university system will be laid off. This is an unconscionable cut. It will do major damage to the university system, and I cannot do anything more than splutter.
That would. 1 minute here. Representative Barnes asks at ease. Do you have a comment to make, Representative Navarre?
Yeah, I do.
Representative Navarre, and then we'll take it at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to try to get across one more time what the vacancy factor is. The vacancy factor is not a bunch of vacant positions that are fully funded. That's not what the vacancy factor is. What the vacancy factor is, if you have a 5% vacancy factor, what that means is you look at what it costs to fully fund that department in the personal services line, and you back out 5%. And you say that those savings are going to be accomplished as people transition from leaving the job to the next person being hired. That's 5%. When you then additionally force them to eat the COLA, it means that you increase the vacancy factor up to 6, 7, maybe more percent. That means 7% of the money needed to fund those positions is taken out of the budget, is not in the budget anywhere. Now what we're saying is an additional 2%. We'll put another additional 2% on top of that. Mr. Speaker, vacancy factors, I think, are in a lot of cases unreasonably high already, and I don't think this amendment makes much sense.
Okay, we're under a call on Representative Barnes. You still want an entities with the House entities. Would the House come back to order? Before the IDs were under amendment number 3, it was under debate.
Point of inquiry, sir.
Representative Martin, your point of inquiry.
Mr. Speaker, I'd wonder if we could have a division of the question. Is the question divisible?
The question would be divisible. That's the desire of this body, but of course that is not the decision of the chairs, other than it's divisible, and whether or not this body wants it divided is another question.
Yes, sir. I want to get an inquiry from you now. Thank you. And then I was going to let it up to another, if they may take that particular section out and let it be decided later if we get proper information.
Hearing objection. Are you ready for the question on the division of the question?
Order, Mr. Speaker. Could you just restate for us what the question is before the body?
It isn't yet.
The question is, no, this is not the roll call, Madam Clerk. The question would be, shall the question be divided? And if it's divided, the assumption would be that the university part would be taken out and handled separately. And not just anything the chair is recommending then. Mr. Majority Leader?
I'm sorry, I'm behind here. What do they actually want to take out?
They would like to take out the University of Alaska and vote on that separately.
That's correct.
Are you ready for the question? Now, the question will be whether or not the amendment should be divided, and I hope the body understands how it would be divided. The question is, shall the amendment be divided? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk, would you tally the board?
13 yeas, 27 nay.
Amendment number 3 is before us in its entirety. Debate may continue. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again, I think we need to discuss this vacancy factor a little more. We all recognize that each department, depending on its size and how many vacant positions they have, is how that is handled by OMB as to the forced vacancy rate. So there's no one across the board figure for all departments as it relates to the funding for forced vacancies already existing. Now, I have in my paws here the open PCN numbers by departments, so I don't get confused. I'll just lay them up here, and we'll just discuss what they are. Department of Administration. As a total position count of total vacant numbers, 1,143. That is 1,451 full-time, 90 part-time seasonal, and 2 non-permanent. For a vacant factor of 25 full-time, 11 part-time seasonal, and 0 non-permanent, for a total of 40. So that's how many the Department of Administration has. Department of Commerce and Economic Development. They have, I've got all the PCN numbers here too. position count, they have a total of 426 full-time, part-time seasonal 17, for a total of 443. They have a vacancy factor of 25 people. Department of Community and Regional Affairs has a total of 197. They have 11 full-time vacant, part-time seasonal 1, for a total of 12 vacant. And in the Department of Corrections, they have 1,312 total funded positions, have total incumbents of 1,287. I'll shorten this up a little bit. And they have 32 total vacant positions. Department of Education, they have total incumbents of 559. They have total funded positions of 595 for a vacancy of 42 people.
Paws make it difficult. If you had hands, you could flip through there easier.
I try. But you know, I get so used to putting socks on Muffin's paws because of the flea powder in the apartment. I keep thinking about paws all the time. Total, 482 for the Department of Environmental Conservation. They have total incumbents of 438, total vacancy of 44. I just love these little PCN runs. They do tell a story. And then we have the Department of Fish and Game. They have 1,386 incumbents. They have total funded position of 1,684, and they have 302 vacant. Then we have the Office of the Governor. He only has 2 pages. He's a real lightweight here. He has 168 full-time positions. He has filled 156, vacant 12, or total incumbents of 162. And then we have the Department of Health and Social Services. They have a total of 2,048 funded positions. They have incumbents of 1,884, or vacancy of 185.
This is getting to be like a filibuster.
I don't mean it to be. It's providing information.
Representative Navarre, your point
of order.
Speaker,
I don't believe the Speaker has asked if she could have permission of the body to read those numbers. I guess what I'd like is if we could take an at ease and she could compile the numbers and read them all at once, or else distribute them or something.
Well, the body seems to be very relaxed in doing. Representative Navarre, I'm inclined to agree with you, but the representative is going through this, and she's very close, I think, of completing this. Another 10 minutes would very easily wrap this up.
It may not even take that long if I use hands instead of paws.
Freedom of speech.
There is, in the Department of Labor, 736 little darlings. They have incumbents of 621, or a total vacancy of 118. I'm sure people want to take notes of so that they can keep all this in their mind. So I'll try not to go too fast. In the Department of Law, now you have to understand when I tell you about the Department of Law, all of their little fellers don't show up here. They show up lots of other places too. But they have funded up there 390, and they have total incumbents of 359 or 35 vacancies. But now remember, they have folks strewn around all over the place. It's funded in other budgets. Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, they have 129 funded positions. They have five vacant incumbents of 124. And the Department of Natural Resources. They put their total on the front page instead of the back. They have a total of 959 funded, 846 filled, and 115 vacant. And then we have the Department of Public Safety. They have 884 positions and 821 filled, 821 incumbents, 67 vacant. Department of Revenue, they have 373 funded, 347 filled, 27 vacant. We're down to the bottom, Mr. Speaker. Department of Transportation, my very favorite department. They have 2,802 little darlings funded. They have 494 vacant. Hopefully we got some of those. Total incumbents left, 2,327. Thank you all for your attention.
Representative McLean.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to applaud Representative from 14A for the vacancy factor information that she provided us, but I would like to also share with her that we have gone over and above the vacancy factor for the community and regional affairs.
Mm. Representative Martin to amendment number 3.
Yes, sir. I think that the representative from beautiful Muldoon has given us a good idea of the problems that we have in certain agencies. And it reminds me what a gentleman of a head of a department told me about 3 years ago, or actually on the Sheffield when he had to be cutting, that if you're fat to begin with, you can survive the lean times easier. And this is a good example. That some agency, that's the reason why I was opposed to across-the-board cutting. This is meaningful cutting. This is cutting according to those who have excess. And I appreciate the work that she did on showing us the excess personnel that aren't being used, not property, they're being used to supplement other parts of the program.
Any further debate on amendment number 3? Representative Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out that the representative that spoke earlier that's in front of me from Anchorage, I happened to be present at those meetings when she was asking the commissioners of the various departments about their vacancy factor, and it seemed to me that a lot of the answers that we were getting from the commissioners as to why there were so many vacancy factors was because of the fact that they didn't have the money to be able to fill any of them because the departments were underfunded in the budget already because of the vacancy factor that the member from Kenai explained to us earlier. And that seemed to make a lot of sense. I'm not sure at what date the representative ran her numbers on the PCNs that are vacant right now, but this amendment is to the budget, which is fiscal year 93, which doesn't start for a few months. And you know, we need to take into consideration that anywhere from 700 to 1,000, probably closer to 1,000 state employees that are removed from the budget already, and a lot of those are probably the vacant PCN numbers that she's talking about right now. So it would be interesting to see if this amendment was defeated, actually how many vacant positions there was going to be once the budget is adopted, having reduced all of those state employees, which again is nearly 1,000 from through the budget cutting process that the Finance Committee went through. So I think, you know, it's nice to hear some of those numbers, and they're certainly interesting, but I don't know if it truly will reflect the FY93 situation at the time the budget's enacted.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think the reading of the list may have knocked Muffy's socks off, but I don't think it helped clarify the vacancy factor.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 3 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
13 yeas, 27 nay.
Amendment number 3 has failed adoption. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to Amendment number 4?
Amendment number 4 by Representative G. Phillips.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment number 4.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The purpose of this amendment is to reduce the merit pay that is given to all state employees from the 100% of the budget that is in place right now to just 10%. In other words, make merit pay truly a merit issue. Right now, we've got automatic step increases. We've got automatic pay increases. As we cut the senior citizens, as we cut the university, as we cut all our social service programs in the state, I think if we would cut just this factor of the salary schedule and make merit pay truly a merit issue, that we could save a lot of dollars in the budget, and I would move this amendment.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, people aren't going to like my answer to this amendment, but we don't put any money in the budget to fund merit increases. If they're going to fund the merit increases, they got to increase their vacancy factor.
Any further debate on Amendment number 4? Representative Taylor.
Yeah, could the sponsor please tell us what the savings are?
Representative Gail Phillips.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I'm unable to tell at this time because I was unable to get those figures from budget.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, again, we don't put money into the budget to fund the increases in merit pay. If merit pay increases are paid, and they are, it has to come out of the dollars in the budget, which we don't fund for merit increases. It means they increase their vacancy factor.
The answer, Representative Gail Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just might clarify, although I was not able to get the information from OMB, there is a bill that has been introduced in the other body for the tune of $14,446,300 to cover this issue.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I hate to be too logical, but it seems to me then, if you decrease the total amount of employees that will be allowed merit, say to 10%, then you can reduce your vacancy factor by 90%. Does that sound too illogical?
It would be acceptable in this body. Are we ready for the question on Amendment number 4? Representative Taylor.
Well, I do have a question for the chairman of the Finance Committee. I appreciated his answer that we do not fund currently merit pay. But if, in fact, that's the case, does not that conflict directly with the Constitution that requires that we have a merit pay system in place? And if so, why are we in conflict with the Constitution?
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, we do have a merit pay increase in statute. It does meet the federal requirements. It is a federal requirement. The money that is used to fund merit increases is funded from increased vacancy factor. There is no additional money that we put in there. It doesn't mean you can't pay it. It just means you have to find the money somewhere else in the budget.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you for the answer. I appreciate that. Thus, the amendment as offered would, in fact, significantly reduce an item that department heads are currently paying under. If, in fact, they are paying a merit pay right now, this language would reduce those department heads as intent language to reduce that amount of merit pay by 90%. In other words, whether it's called a step increase or a longevity increase or however you would designate it in your employment agreement, this would actually be suggesting that that be reduced by 90%.
Are we ready for the question? Question is, shall amendment number 4 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Okay. Would the roll open for Representative Lincoln? Madam Clerk, close the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
13 yeas, 27 nay.
Amendment number 4 has failed adoption. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to amendment number 5?
Amendment number 5 by Representatives R. Phillips and Lehman.
Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of amendment number 5.
Hearing objection, proceed, Representative Phillips.
Speaker, this amendment deletes each Alaskan who applies and receives a permanent fund from paying the whole harmless clause for the AFDC and Medicaid. And this has been a subject of controversy, particularly in my district. My constituents feel that they should not be paying for this whole harmless clause. In talking to the Department of Health and Social Services, if this amendment passes, that recipient will have to make one of two choices. One, either accept the permanent fund and be denied the AFDC or Medicaid benefits, or just the reverse, but not both. And so I'm just offering this amendment. This would force the situation where the person who's receiving these benefits will have to make a choice.
Are you ready for the question on amendment number 5? The question is, shall amendment number 5 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk please tally the board.
13 yeas, 27 nays.
Amendment number 5 has failed adoption. Reference to amendment number 6.
Amendment number 6 by Representative R. Phillips.
Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number 6 be adopted.
Hearing objection, Representative Phillips.
Speaker, this is the legislature's budget. What I'm asking is approximately $2.3 million reduction in our own funding for the operation of the legislature. What it does, it reduces the legislative travel discretionary line by 30%. Eliminates interim committee staff in election year, which it happens to be this year, and reduce the personal interim staff in election year by 25%. Also reduces about $10,000 in a leadership discretionary fund and about $457,000 reduction in legislative council session expenses. Speaker, I just got back from a constituent hearing last Saturday. And this item came on up upon our constituents to our delegation, and they recommended that we ought to reduce our staffs, and I think they're right.
Representative Gail Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to speak in support of this amendment. I received quite a few telephone calls after we passed the supplemental budget where we did not cut the legislative spending budget. And we are looking at cuts all over this state. I'll reiterate again, as I did on a previous amendment, we're making cuts to the university, we're making cuts to children, we're making cuts to welfare recipients, we're making cuts all over the place. and we are not making cuts to our own legislative budget. I think this would be an act of good faith across the state, and I know I've received many, many calls from my constituents about the fact that we did not cut in the supplemental, so I'd speak in favor of this.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have cut the legislative budget.
Representative Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of the amendment, but I in particular want to note one of the items in there. There's a $10,000 reduction in the leadership discretionary fund, and specifically that's to help address the issue of double dipping of per diem. And I've talked about this before, and while I don't believe it's widespread practice in this body, I believe that it is something that needs to be stopped. And I believe that this is at least an effort to reduce that expenditure. And so for that reason, perhaps if not that alone, I urge the members to support this amendment.
Representative Mackey.
Mr. Speaker, I was going to rise, sir, for a point of order, but I allowed the representative to continue. I didn't want to interrupt him, but I think for him to suggest that the leadership is allowing for double dipping is way out of line.
Well, I can tell you that is not the case, and I think the representative knows that, but the point of order has to be called at immediate at the time of the infraction, and but do appreciate the remarks that were made, and also basically agree with the representative who made those remarks. Any further debate on amendment number 6? Ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 6 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
13 yeas, 27 nays.
Amendment number 6 has failed adoption. The chair understands that there will be amendment number 7, but it's being duplicated. What stage are we in that duplication? Okay. Would the House stand at ease? The House is under call. The amendment is coming out right now. We had amendment number 7 being circulated. Madam Clerk, would you make a reference to amendment number 7?
Amendment number 7 by Representatives Lehman and R. Phillips.
Representative Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number 7.
Hearing objections.
Mr. Speaker, this is similar in type to amendment number 5. I don't need to go into detail, and I think it's fairly self-explanatory. If the members will look in their packets on page 22, they'll be able to find the line item. And this just provides, the same as before, provides a choice for people. And I believe it's a reasonable way to approach the budget, and a reasonable way to offer an over a $2 million reduction in the budget and general funds.
Any further debate on amendment number 7? Representative Taylor.
Yeah, I think we're still under a call of the House, Mr. Speaker, and while we're waiting for people to arrive, I just state again that the real question that needs to be asked is, after we have paid for all of these benefits, both the people of the state of Alaska and the federal government, can somebody tell me why, after we've paid for all these benefits, that we should then pay a bonus on top of those benefits? I don't understand that, because the only reason the benefits are paid is because people do not have money of their own with which to take care of these situations. And I've just never understood the logic of that one. I mean, if the people are unfortunate enough to fall within an economic zone whereby they're entitled to various benefits, and we then, as a state, having the compassion of a state and showing some charity and kindness towards these people, wish to make certain that they receive certain benefits as long as they qualify, then don't we make a mockery of the entire system when we allow them to achieve an income level higher than what they would be allowed to stay on the system in. And if that's the case, maybe what we should do is raise the income level for all people in Alaska, so that if at any month you happen to be at the same point that you would be if you'd received a permanent dividend fund that check that month, then those people ought to be entitled also to receive those benefits. Or is it only the folks that get it during the month in which they receive the permanent dividend fund check? That's the way we've been doing it. I can't find any reason in logic to do this. People have stated when this amendment was offered in another venue, oh, what about social conscience? My social conscience is clear. We took care of those people during those months. We weren't required to. Nobody held a gun to our head as a state and said, you have to. We did it because we felt it was appropriate and should be done. But why in the world should we put a bonus on top of that? And that's really the call that you're making in this amendment, and I believe the one that just was voted on. Thank you.
Representative Blair.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is the longevity bonus hold harmless, not the permanent fund dividend hold harmless. Sometimes we slip to the tongue. It happens to me all the time when I can speak about these two particular hold harmless programs, but this is the Alaska longevity bonus hold harmless. For those of you who might have been misunderstood the comments of the previous speaker, the Social Security Administration of the federal government has indicated to the state of Alaska that if we needs-based this program at any dollar amount, $50,000, $30,000 per individual, if we needs-based this at any amount, we wouldn't have to be in the situation where we would disqualify people in a given year or a given month, in this particular case, in a given month for the receipt of this benefit. If we would only needs-base it, we would immediately do away with the $2.1 million price tag here. And I think the comment from the speaker from Wrangell might be a good one, and that is that he suggested that we raise the income level for all Alaskans. And if we did that, clearly we would avoid this problem. That's the second way that we could avoid this problem. If at any given month the highest amount of the poverty guideline that a recipient, let's just say the wealthiest recipient that otherwise qualified for these programs under federal law, might be 110% of federal poverty. We ought to raise that perhaps to the federal poverty guideline. The problem is that you also increase, though, the general cost of that program, probably far in excess of the $2.1 million that we're talking about here. So I haven't done the math in an awful long time, but my guess is that by raising the threshold or the ceiling there for income calculations, that we incur a much larger hit to the general fund as a result of this. The bottom line, though, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker, is that these are still, under old age assistance, some of the poorest people in the state of Alaska. We do not have a needs-based program, and needs-basing it at any level, that's a political decision we have not chosen to take, but a political issue, clearly, but needs-basing it at any level, and believe me, we've had the discussions, would make this absolutely unnecessary. So I would hope that members who are concerned about this general fund hit of $2.1 million would step up to the political issue and modify the programs to make it needs-based and do away with the program or do away with these additional costs that way rather than at this particular method.
Any further debate on amendment number 7? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 7 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk, tally the board.
13 yeas, 27 nay.
Amendment number 7 has failed adoption. Madam Clerk, do you have any further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the bill be considered engrossed and advanced to third reading.
Hearing objections.
I'll object just for a moment, Mr. Speaker, if I could. And maybe before I make any comments, could I have just a brief at ease?
Would the House stand? We had a motion to advance the bill. There were objections. Are the objections maintained?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I maintain the objection solely for the purposes of stating that, unfortunately, because of the rushed nature of this situation, and I don't mean to imply that it's any more rushed probably than it has been in previous years, it's just that the way in which the system works, we end up with coming down to quite a crunch. And as far as I know, and I've now checked with my caucus, and I would doubt if there are any in yours, there are no further amendments to come forward. It's just, I guess I would like to compliment at this time the process that has gone on, because I think it has been the best one that I've seen in 8 years on this floor. I think to some extent the limited number of amendments offered indicates that. And though they may have been for large bites or large amounts, they at least indicate, I think, that we were down to talking about issues and not just the pettiness of numbers, so to speak. So aside from being frustrated somewhat at the rush and the crunch caused by this last minute or two, the minority will not stand in the way of advancing this legislation at this time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Objections maintained. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, only potential objection, which I will not maintain as it was given, but I too want to say that I do think that the Finance Committee has done a great job, and I commend the gentleman from Kenai for good faith effort, although I am one to believe that we should have tried to cut more, and that's the reason why I'm in the minority, perhaps, that we think differently. And the process is working in the sense that we do have freedom, and I thank you for your courtesy to everyone to let us express our views, even if we may put both feet in the mouth. That's our business, and it may shut us up. But the main thing is that I do think it's been a good faith effort. I absolutely hate leaving the budget go because I'm afraid of what may happen on the other side. I'm just so scared how many tens and hundreds of millions are going to add on this when they promote themselves as a great conservative. I think it's just the opposite. So I hate to let it go as ways it is.
Our objections maintained. Representative Mary Miller.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Repeating the remarks of the minority leader and many of us who have said that we appreciate the process this year. I know in my subcommittee that we saw some very serious work to make reductions, and maybe I wasn't pleased with everything that has resulted, but I do want to say to everyone involved that I appreciated that my participation was, I felt as though it was significant, and I did want to call to attention of the body that in working during the at-ease with my committee members, we've noticed a technical correction. The chairman of co-chair of finance has indicated that there will be a correction, but I wanted to note it for the record that on page 21, line 21, I believe it is, page 21, line 21, Amateur Sports Authority has actually not been funded, and we do show an appropriation item of $126,100.
Yeah, you know, this is getting to the point where the question is to move it to third reading, and some people are objecting and making floor speeches, and I guess we can handle it that way, but it's not my preference. Representative
Speaker, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't finished.
I know.
I think perhaps you were wondering why I was bringing it up. It was because to move to third would not allow me to amend. Had I found during the at-ease that the others on my committee were overruling my objections, then I would have, sir, proposed an amendment.
Now, Representative Merrimill, my remarks were not directed to you as other people were starting to pop up in relation as if it was in third reading, and that was my concern at this point.
I see.
Not you.
All right. Thank you. And that ends my remarks.
Representative Brown.
Right, and we had a very brief conversation, and I think we were looking at the wrong bill, if I could call that to the member who just spoke, because I believe we were looking at the prior version of the bill, not the finance version, and I think the concern is not there. The item she references does not appear in the final version.
Are the objections maintained to the motion to advance to third reading? Hearing no objections, Madam Clerk, would you please give the bill its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 405, Finance, an act making appropriations to the operating and loan program expenses of state government and to capitalize funds and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for the question? Representative Farns.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a little over a month ago, we began this process of working toward a budget that we were hoping that all members of this body could support when it was brought to the floor. The Finance Committee of this body, in my opinion, has worked hard. It has worked fairly. But the bottom line that we sought to obtain was elusive. The figure that was discussed by the third floor, the other body, and this body was that we would work toward a reduction of $200 million and that we would all jump off of the cliff together. It had been my hope that we could reach the $200 million figure. But I discovered early in the process that that would be virtually impossible. Instead, those of us in the Republican caucus of this body then worked toward reducing below FY92 authorized, including the supplemental. Because to reach the FY92 authorized, you must factor in the supplemental that has already passed both bodies of the legislature and gone to the administration for signature. Mr. Speaker, while we worked in due diligence, and I do believe that the Ziegler rule should be adopted by this body as well as the other body, and of course the Ziegler rule is that you don't work after 7 o'clock at night. Because once you work past that time, you get tired. You've put in a full day of work here. And sometimes, not thinking clearly, people probably put things into the budget that shouldn't be there. I offer you an example. Last Friday, the House Finance Committee had reached a reduction in general fund operations of the government of $85 million. By Saturday, we had somehow put the old automobile in reverse and we were down to $58 million. The due diligence that we had put forth in reducing the budget all of a sudden was being added back in other categories. That distressed me, it still does. Because I believe that if we hadn't have switched money that we'd taken out of the budget to other categories, that we would have far exceeded the goal that was set for us. Mr. Speaker, I know that you can do all kinds of things with numbers, but I don't stand before you today trying to do anything with numbers that cannot be proven. So I'm going to speak to what I believe to be the real impact of this budget. And with the leave of the body, I'm going to quote some figures from a document that I have in my hand. Mr. Speaker, under formula programs, we had a reduction of $43.5 million. Our funding sources change was $76.4 million. The real impact, 32.9 million increase over FY92, when funding sources were changed. This 32.9 million, of course, includes the $22 million increase in the foundation formula that was in House Bill 25. In the House versus the governor's amended, 69 million, funding source change of 76.4. The real impact is 7.4 million increase above the governor's proposed FY93 budget. Again, that includes the 22 million increase in foundation formula in House Bill 25. And the non-formula programs, the House versus the FY92 authorized, was 22.4 million below the operating budget of 92. If you take into consideration a debt, loans, and the 470 fund, that was another 16.1 million for 38.5 million. Our funding sources changes in this category was 11.7 million and increased user fees of 8.3 million. The real impact, we were 18.5 million below FY92 funding level, including operating debt, service loans, 470 fund. If you consider only then operating, you're 2.4 million below FY92. But I've handed out a piece of paper, and if you'll all just turn to the back page, you will see combined formula and non-formula. House versus FY92 authorized that we are $82 million below that figure. The problem is we have 88.1 million in funding changes. In other words, the source of the funding is not what it was traditionally. And increased user fees is 18.3 million. Excuse me, 8.3 million, which means that the real impact of this budget over FY92, considering formulas and non-formulas, again, this number includes 22 million increase in the foundation formula, we are still 14.4 million above FY92 budget. I don't think that we were so far apart that if we had have really wanted to have a budget that reflect unanimity among most members of this body, that we could not have reached below the FY92 level, because $14.4 million is not a tremendous amount of money. When the education bill was pulled out and sent to the other body, there were many of us that were dismayed, because we didn't want to have to vote a second time against education. But there was no way we could see the full picture. We couldn't vote for something that was above last year's figure. So we asked that that not happen. But it did. And we were forced again to vote against a bill that many of us in our hearts would love to have voted for. Today, we are voting on a budget that I believe, with a little more effort on some people's parts, could have gotten us to a budget below FY92 level, that the people of this state would have appreciated, and that we would have all been able, to some degree, to support. Again, Mr. Speaker, I commend both the co-chairman of the House Finance Committee for the way they handled the committee, the way that the consideration of amendments proposed by all members was handled among the members. Many times we had a 5-5 vote, somebody be out of the room, or we had a 5-6 vote, or we had 8-3, or 9-2, or whatever. It was a process that there were not votes that were bound, that people voted how they felt about them. although I might have had amendments that wasn't passed. I didn't feel bad about that because I felt it was given due deliberation and due consideration based on the makeup of the committee being 8-3, that I wasn't going to get every amendment that I proposed. And I'm also sure that the majority members didn't feel they were going to get every amendment that they proposed, because many of theirs failed. And many of them failed because minority members and majority members voted together, or simply because majority members and minority members voted together. So the process was fair. And for that, I believe that each and every member of this body can hold their heads high. The public at large, I believe, have a disdain for government in general, legislators in particular, because they believe that everything is done behind the closed doors of smoke-filled rooms and nothing is done in the open of the public. That is not true in the case of this budget that comes to the floor today. It was worked on in the open. There were times I really got angry at the co-chairman, although I love him dearly, and I almost had to throw something at him a couple of times, but it wasn't because the process wasn't fair. It was because some of his jokes I just couldn't abide. Anyway, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry that we weren't able to reach a budget that we could all agree on. I'm sorry that we as a legislative body have to come in here today and sort of taint the process on amendments and this budget along party lines. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, could we go up to introduction, I guess?
Are there any objections? Proceed.
Mr. Speaker, I want to introduce in Gallery B my chief finance staff person, the brains behind my office and the finance committee, Allison Elgee. And could we have a brief at ease?
The House then at ease. We had the bill in third reading and under debate. Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Still under introduction, I guess.
Are there any objections?
Continue. Speaker, I'd like to introduce a friend of mine, a constituent from Seward, who is a teacher down here on his own tab in Gallery B, Jerry Dixon.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Jackal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce a school board member from the Aleutian Z School Board from the community of Cold Bay, Michael Malilio.
Representative Taylor?
Yes, Representative Davis and I have a constituent and a member of the president, I believe, of the school board from Wrangell, Bill Mesmer in Gallery A. Stand, please, Bill.
Any further guests for introduction? Back down into the supplemental calendar and the bill before us in third reading. Is there any further debate? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the numbers that I gave to you, reading off the State of Alaska operating budget comparisons done by legislative finance, this was based on the governor's FY93 authorized, and in fact, the funding source changed of the permanent fund hold harmless. Was only a change because of what happened last year. So this budget actually reflects a $1.1 million reduction, I believe. 1.6, thank you.
Any further debate upon the bill? Representative Taylor?
Lest there be too much joy in Mudville.
You're going to sling a little, huh?
Mighty Casey did strike out. No one criticizes the process. Best we've seen in 8 years. Were we successful? Success, I believe, will be measured more by the historian than by the current pollster. Our success here today will be determined by those who must follow us, those who must continue to fund the programs at the same and accelerated levels that we have left those formulas at, those who must continue to fund negotiated contracts with state employees and with employees who do not have someone negotiating a contract for them, those who must follow in our footsteps. The Boy Scout motto is that you leave a campsite in a better condition than what you found it. Unfortunately, I don't believe we've done that, Mr. Speaker. I don't believe we have, because when I look at the revenue projections that I have seen, done by several different groups, both within and without this body, they indicate to me that unless we get $200 million below fiscal 92 actual, and even if we stay there, we're looking at a $1.5 to $1.8 billion deficit 5 years out. So to applaud ourselves and slap ourselves on the back for getting down to what we spent last year, and I suggest to you that there are all kinds of varying interpretations on that as to whether or not we are actually below or significantly above or significantly below. I think we're close. I don't know whether it's 1.6 or whatever it is. I'm only suggesting to you that we needed to make that $200 million. We didn't make that. The numbers tell me we need to be $200 million below that number that we are at today. And even then, we will face a huge deficit in our future in Alaska. Not to have addressed that today in this budgeting process, I think, is a failure of the budgeting process. There are those who will criticize my comments and say, Robin, we did the best we could. I admit a good job, a good effort was made, but was it the best we could have done? I suggest to you that I've seen a minimum of $50 million in additional general fund that could have been taken out of there. And those are only a handful of ideas that could have been applied. For people on this floor to suggest that, as I have seen quotes in the newspapers and heard comments in the media, that somehow each of these cuts were driven by the Republican minority, I say, God bless you. I'd have got you a lot further down if I could have. But you and I both know that's not accurate. We only represent 13 votes on this floor. There are 27 of you who could have driven it much further. And you are the ones who are in control, not me. All we can do is to act as the loyal voice of opposition, to stand here today and suggest that we would have liked to have gone further, that we helped you go as far as we could, that we could not make it to a final level where we all felt sufficient comfort to vote for the budget. There are many things in this budget that cause me personal pain, just as they do other members on this floor. There are many things here I do not want to see occur. But to be fiscally responsible, to be honestly responding to the people who elected me when I told them that I would come to Juneau and I would attempt in the 2 year period that I was here to reduce the size of state government, I can hardly applaud myself, Mr. Speaker, that in the second year of that effort, we may, if we're lucky at this time, be talking about a break even with last year. So, like you, I take responsibility for my actions here. I only suggest that we would have liked to have gone further, that I believe that we will not have a choice, and it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you sit on next year. I firmly believe that with the anticipated shortfalls in revenue, the anticipated increases in each of these formula programs, that the blood's going to be about this deep on this floor next year because we did not take those additional cuts that were necessary this year to even begin to get it down to a tolerable level. And to fail to do that is to leave this state in a position where we run off a cliff in the very near future. And it isn't a matter of shall we choose to hold hands or not. We're going off of that cliff whether you like it or not, because there is less and less oil coming out of that pipe, and there is no desire that I can see in this state government of ours to provide for the diversification of natural resource development that is absolutely crucial to the future of this country. If we are ever to have a tax base upon which this state may operate and not be totally dependent upon oil, we're going to have to see a change reflected, by the way, in this budget. My former colleague from Ketchikan and I stood on this floor as long as 8 years ago commenting on the percentages of this budget that actually go into natural resource development and the opening up of jobs and the development of future and possible jobs and economies in this state. It's a very small percentage of our budget. I personally believe that to that extent, we're out of priorities, we're out of whack. We have allowed ourselves to be caught up in social programs and the funding of those formulas to the extent that those social programs and those formulas are driving this budget. I think it's going to take a great deal of effort to significantly reduce those. I personally don't want to have to do that at that level, but I believe that people in the future are going to have to and will have no choice. They will not have the good fortune of those of us who sit here today to be able to make slight choices here, have a little pot of money we can pull money out of there, be able to shift this or shift that, to be able to add a few program receipts. They're not going to have that opportunity because those things are all going to be gone. And faced with that alternative, I can only submit to you that yes, Mr. Speaker, Casey was a good ball player, and he tried real hard. And he played the game fair. I'm not suggesting it wasn't played fair for a moment. But Mr. Speaker, he did strike out. And there is no joy in Mudville. Thank you.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, there is a lot of joy here today. I think for all of those of us who spent many, many hours up in House Finance, we are very relieved to have brought this baby to the floor and see it going on its way off to the next body. I think had we spent much more time up in House Finance, we probably all would have been screaming and yelling. It was a very hard process, and it was one where I think everybody who sat around that table, as well as many other members who came to join us from time to time, felt very good about the process. I also feel good about the budget itself. It's a balanced budget. It's balanced not only from the standpoint of revenues to pay for it, but it's balanced between rural and urban needs. It's balanced between those people who wanted to cut more and those people who wanted to cut less. I think that the process of that teeter-totter that gets balanced between those who want more and those who want less was, I believe, very fairly struck in the document that is before us today. I am pleased that we were able to achieve our goal of being less than FY92. Whether or not we should have been further than that or not, I think this is the first time that we have brought to the floor a budget that was actually less than the year before. That represents a rather major turnaround, not only in terms of our willingness to work through some very difficult cuts, and do so not in the easy way of across-the-board percentage reductions, but in the hard way of actually evaluating the merits, the trade-offs, the values that went into the various choices we had to make. That's the hard way. I believe it's the right way, and I think we all feel good that we did it that way. Mr. Speaker, in order for us to change people's expectations about what Alaska government does for Alaskans, we had to take some rather dramatic steps this year. I think there are a number of programs, particularly entitlement programs, that for quite a while have not been restrained, and that now that we are bringing a budget to the floor that does restrain some of those entitlement programs, although just a little bit, we're beginning to see the avalanche of POMs. And it is, of course, because for a long time we were able to provide those entitlements free of charge to everybody. And it seemed for a long time that maybe there would be no end to that. But as we have seen those formula programs grow to be now half of the operating budget, we see that because they are population-driven, we have to make some major changes. We have to make some major changes in terms of who receives them, the rules under which they get them, and the amount of money that we can afford to pay for them. This is a major departure from budgets that have come to this floor in the past, and it's not easy. I think all of us have a heavy heart with regard to those programs that provide for people, whether they be seniors or whether they be welfare recipients, to see that those programs are not fully funded as they have been in the past is not an easy decision to make. It's very hard. But I think we have all become convinced that it's absolutely essential that that happen so that we don't go off a cliff. Like the minority leader, I believe that unless we take responsible action, that could be where we end up. But the responsible action has been taken by bringing to this floor a budget that is less than last year. The responsible action has begun in saying to the people of the state of Alaska, the free ride is over. You're going to have to begin to pay for some of the services that you receive so generously from the state of Alaska. And hence, not only the changes that you see in this bill before you, but the triplet or the trio of bills that follow it in terms of asking people to help pay for some of the services that they receive. Changing expectations and asking people to pay for some of what they receive is what the future looks like. It has begun with this budget on the floor today.